you went on this show.
You kind of have to keep up with it. It's very intelligent.
It sounds like a scam.
They are not part of the legitimate business world.
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Everything was a fight for me. I lost my family. Financially, I got destroyed. And everything I ever saved, I lost because of a bunch of situations, you know. Even though the divorce is over, it's like the gift that keeps on giving. Now I'm not a millionaire now, that's for sure.
Yes, you are. Hell's bells. How does it go from 115 on Friday to 140 on Monday? $140 million. Oh, Allison Treasor, criminal defense attorney. Good evening. Yes. Well, I wish I could go to sleep and 48 hours be worth, I don't know, $40 million more. How's that happen?
Well, I think we were so shocked by the $115 million that they originally awarded that we knew that the that Gawker would be slapped with punitives, that this jury just had no sympathy for them and really did want to punish them. So they heard some testimony, or they heard from both counsel briefly today. Hulk's attorney said, look, send a message, punish these people for what they did. It was reckless. It was awful. And Gawker's attorney, which it was so interesting, said, look, we've been punished enough. Nick Denton, the harm that he will suffer financially is really unbelievable, and that A.J. Delario will be in financial ruin. And the jury piled it on, awarded $15 million in punitives directly from Gawker, another $10 million to Nick Denton, and then $100,000, which I think was partially because in plaintiff's closing today, they said, look, he really doesn't have any money. He has some outstanding student loans and no assets.
Okay, so where does the original $110 million come from?
Compensatory damages, so economic losses and emotional distress and things like that, which is so interesting, by the way, because he admitted on the stand that he never really sought help for it. He's not on any medication. And so you never see compensatory damages like this without any real proof from doctors that he's really suffering that much. I mean, this was much more a condemnation of Gawker and their style of journalism than anything else.
Sounds like a runaway jury to me. I mean, honestly, it does, because Gawker also believes the judge erred by not allowing all that critical evidence that you and I talked about several times last week. I mean, notably the testimony of Bubba the Love Sponge, who claims Hawk knew he was making a sex tape, and then Hawk went on different various radio stations and talked about the sex tape. That's where, you know, his exaggeration of the 10-inch penis came up, and he said, well, that's Hawk Hogan. That's not Terry Bollea speaking. All of that garbage. None of the tape was ever admitted, including the racist rant. None of that stuff.
So since we last spoke on Friday, these documents from the FBI were released to the public. So we have some insight. And Gawker's claim was the judge should have admitted the FBI's investigation.
Sure.
And the relevant part of that investigation showed that that Hulk knew that he was being recorded, and that is absolutely material to the case, and it may have very well changed the verdict. In addition, of course, when we talked about it, was Bubba the Love Sponge. He should have been called to testify.
Absolutely.
He should have been compelled to testify. These are certainly issues, and I think we touched on this before. I do think that an appellate court will reduce the amount.
Oh, you do, because we were thinking on Friday that
they won't
usually
change the
don't.
Verdict.
They won't change the verdict, no.
I do not think that appellate courts will disrupt this verdict. I really do not.
I heard a story today that Gawker itself is probably only worth around $83 million. So then what?
Right. So Gawker's not. And, you know, the thing is, they've got to put up bond in the total amount of the judgment in Florida in order to appeal. So we had a discussion today on how they're going to come up with that money.
How are they going to do that? Oh, well, I mean, you know, dump Trump. Trump dump. Yes, you just file for bankruptcy.
Well, I don't know how much of this is dischargeable, and I do not believe that punitives are dischargeable, nor would
Someone
they be covered by
right.
Gawker's insurance.
Right. Yes. So if you can't file bankruptcy, your insurance policy doesn't cover it. Where does it come from? Because let's think about Gawker for a second. Last night on 60 Minutes, they did a great piece on Gawker itself and Nick Denton. And it was very interesting. I mean, basically, this is a guy who's got a floor or two or a building or whatever. And these guys are punching out stories. Everybody that works there needs to come up with 12 stories a day or whatever. And so it's all intellectual property. That's not worth anything.
Well, and they said that his estimated net worth is $3.7 million. So, and, you know, as we all know the saying, you can't, you know, there's no money. If you can't get money, what they'll do is they'll liquidate all of his assets. Now, this is at the end of the day, right?
Right, so but these are office
collect?
Supplies.
They liquidate
right.
all the assets.
Right.
There was some claim that the parent company is worth $117 million. But really, where are they going to get this money from? And if they don't have it, they don't have it. But what's interesting is, could this really be the collapse of such a popular website? I mean, it's really incredible.
Yeah, and the reverberations have been heard around the world. And by the way, you know, Nick Denton himself is British. Around the world, as far as the media is concerned. And now, where do things lie with the First and Fourth Amendment? Freedom of speech versus freedom of press. What is the fine line that you have to, you now balance yourself in the media?
Well, I think for Florida purposes, the appellate court will define that. They will actually get into that issue. Remember, this court ruling is only binding in Florida. But if you want to take it as a guide, and I think many media companies do have to take a look at what this jury did and say, look, is this newsworthy? Is this something that I will put my career on the line, or is it so over the top that I shouldn't risk it? And I do believe that will stifle some reporting.
Well, look, I have always, growing up, I've been a Hulk Hogan fan forever. This makes me not want to be one because I think it's outrageous.
You think it's outrageous that he asked for the $100 million?
Well, the whole thing is convoluted because him and Bubba were best friends. The sex with his wife was consensual. Allegedly, they did it several times. And then somebody snuck the camera in there, allegedly. And then allegedly someone leaked it to Gawker. But we didn't, the trial never got to know about any of this. The jury, I'm sorry. It just seems very fishy. It just smells.
No, I agree with you that there are parts that really never became known to the jury, and I don't know if it would have changed their opinion.
Well,
but
and the whole part where Hulk Hogan would go on the radio and talk about it.
Has followed many trials for a long time. The cavalier attitude of Gawker
was horrific.
Yes.
It was bad.
And juries
bad.
Don't like to see that.
Yeah, it was bad. That, what is his name? DeRullo? DeLurio.
Yeah.
DeLurio. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, awful. This is the guy who...
Nobody, when you say in a deposition, whether you're joking or not, that very few celebrity sex tapes are off limits and that children are only off limits under the age of 4, a jury's going to punish you for
what
that.
What do you expect? Yes. I mean, probably $100 million came from just that stupid statement.
Yes. And let me tell you, their inner office memos and emails where they were joking and asking if Hulk Hogan had a do-rag on his private part didn't help either, because that showed how little they cared about the effect it would have on him.
It's just bad all the way around. I mean, it's just bad. I don't know what else to say. You know, are we going to wake up tomorrow and he's worth another $50 million? Or are we done?
We're done. And I do think the number will go down. I do believe it'll go down. But regardless, he is a millionaire once again and many times over.
How many million, I'm going to scratch my head, do you think he might donate to Bubba?
I mean, you know, here's the thing. You're right. Not all the information came out, so we really don't know. But... what we certainly do know is it's interesting that when there was a civil suit against Bubba, They settled for $5,000,
and that was not admitted into the trial either. Yeah. There's just a lot of strange holes in this. Well, I appreciate your time. You're the
Absolutely.
Best. Allison Trees, a Wild About Trial is her website. And all the fun trials you can just stream right there at work while you're supposed to be working and you're not. We know you're not anyway. All right. Thank you, Allison.
Yeah, of course. We have some good ones coming up, so I'll let you know what's coming up.
Oh, please do. Yes, we love it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. We're going to take a break and we'll be back. When we do come back, Elon Musk in the news. Wife files for second divorce. Not once, twice. Oh, my gosh. We've just got so much good stuff here tonight. Ben Affleck's back. Burt Reynolds has regrets. Oh, my. Tom Hanks. Uh-oh. All on the way on the Trex Radio Show on KGOA 10.
Fresh, live, local. The Trex Radio Show on KGOA 10.
Superman is way richer than Batman, I can tell you that. That's a fact. Jack, I'll tell you why in a minute. Batman v Superman is out. So I've been curious all weekend long, and of course I knew my go-to guy would be my intern, Dwayne.
Yes.
What's the lowdown?
So Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, is getting great reviews. Its premiere was last night in New York, and the fans already went to Twitter. Some of the fans were saying, because you know how a lot of people were skeptical about Ben Affleck's part as Batman. And now everybody, they're going straight to Twitter and they're basically expressing how Ben Affleck did such a great job. Someone said Affleck's Bruce Wayne may be the best on screen to date. Another person says,
who said that? Matt Damon?
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. Another person said, so Ben Affleck is my favorite Batman now. And that's a lot since, like, The Dark Knight. That's like, a bit huge leap to say of all time Ben Affleck is my favorite Batman.
I know. I always thought that. Yeah. I was very skeptical with him coming in there.
Yeah, me too.
Right.
I saw the trailer, and I was like, okay, I don't know how they're going to spin this, but let's just see how it works out. And evidently, it's been going well. And Marvel, better watch out. There's another one here. It says, I can confirm the loudest applause of the night was Wonder Woman's entrance. So Wonder Woman also made a huge impact on the movie. I think her name is Gal Gadot.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But we did find out one thing. Ben Affleck's giant back tattoo of that phoenix rising from the ashes, which has drawn a lot of criticism from even his ex-girlfriend, Jennifer Lopez, who said it was god-awful, and his soon-to-be ex-wife, Jennifer Garner, well, they both can zip it because turns out it's not even real.
Fake for a movie. I actually do have a number of tattoos. I have a fair number of tattoos, but I don't have them. I try to not have them in places where you have to do a lot of cover-up.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean? So they're all under the it's just, so they get sort of addictive, you know, tattoos.
Oh, my God. Okay. We fell for it, too. I'm sorry we did. So who won the competition?
Who won between Batman and Superman? That's a spoiler.
It is a spoiler? All right, people. Well, maybe it is, but...
It's released on March 25th, though, so...
I'm going to tell you what I think. Actually, thebitbag.com is going to tell you what they think. Everyone thinks... I'm going to tell you who's richer. I'm not going to spoil it. Superman is way richer than Batman. Everyone thinks of Batman as the richest superhero. But these guys say, well, Superman has way more money. I didn't just say way. I said way. Most of Superman's net worth comes from the fact that he's an alien. That means he has all kinds of cool technology from his home planet, which can be commercialized or used for research. Or maybe could help Elon Musk with his marriage and his divorce. Right. Needs more rockets, Elon. Not those kind. Most of Superman's net worth comes from the fact that he's an alien, as I mentioned. Plus, Superman would spend way less on healthcare since he's impervious to everything. Everything, seriously. Why would this man need healthcare? He would do well in America. He would be the only American who would do well without healthcare.
Save so much money.
Right. Yes. My God, you're like a Bernie Sanders. It's not late night yet. I almost said something else. Seriously, they looked into that. And in the end, it's estimated that Superman has assets of $72.1 billion compared to Batman's $23.5 billion. Okay, there you have it. You will tell me off the air who won.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Can't we spoil it?
I think Wonder... I haven't seen it, okay. But I want someone to win. I want a specific
8:08, 8:10. Should we spoil it? Maybe they win during the 9 o'clock hour. All right. This is in from, breaking news on TMZ? Let me see here. Elon Musk, the brains behind Tesla and PayPal, has a problem he can't seem to solve. His wife has filed for divorce again. Actress Tallulah Riley has filed to end their second marriage a second time. According to the couple, they've been living separately for the last 6 months. Their history is a love story set in the middle of a hurricane, according to TMZ. They married in 2010, but divorced 2 years later. They remarried 18 months later in 2013. Elon didn't think the second time around was right, so he filed for divorce on New Year's Eve. What a night on 2014. What a way to bring in 2015, man. But he withdrew the petition in August of 2015. It took him 8 months to get over New Year's Eve. What? Apparently, it was not meant to be. They'll say they'll remain friends through it all. No kids, which is probably a good thing. But, okay, well, their business. That's a lot of business, though. Now, if that was like Hulk Hogan, you know, if he'd get divorced again with $140 million, and then you would have $70, and then if you get divorced again, then you'd have $40, and I'm just saying. So I don't know how many billions he has. Does he have $2 billion? So then he gets $1 billion. Then he has $1 billion. Then he gets divorced again. Now he has $500 million. Then you get divorced again, and you better stop hooking up. At what point do you pull the plug? Not again. All right. Good stuff. We're going to take a break, and we come back. We're going to talk to our career coach, Marty Nemko. So we're going to talk about a very short course in networking to land a gig. And should you go mainstream? A lot of people don't want to go mainstream anymore. Yeah, especially if you're younger. He has some good ideas and some good thoughts. He's our career coach, Marty Nemko, at MartyNemko.com. We'll discuss and we'll chat with him next on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810. That's Chris Daughtry performing Bring Me to Life by Evanescence from last night on The Passion, which aired on Fox. Yeah, there were some great performances. All right, good evening, and thank you for joining me on this Monday. And Monday means Marty Nemko and career coach time. Hello, Marty.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. So we want to talk about networking, landing a job, and I think this is important because to assume that Monster or WayUp or LinkedIn or ZipRecruiter is going to get you a gig is probably not the right way to go about things.
Well, perhaps the big surprising thing is networking is not for everybody. Some people network very successfully. If you, dear listeners, if you look back on your life, you've always been taught ad nauseum that you should network. But if you look back at your efforts to schmooze, your efforts to send cold letters, cold calls, join things and try to meet people, if that hasn't worked for you, the chances are that's not going to work for you. Some people are natural-born schmoozers. They're particularly good-looking and personable, and they've got this winsome smile. You know, so I'm not going to try to guilt-trip you into networking if that's not what you're good at. But if you're decent at it and you'd like to see some improvement, Drex asked me a question or two about how to make the most of networking.
Well, rather than try to do it at an expansive level in a mass kind of coverage, probably narrow it down to what you're interested in and people who you might know who are in that sort of business.
And importantly, some people do best in a party environment.
Right.
Some best do it one-on-one. So pick your method. You know, there's all kinds of networking. There are people who are good writers and hate one-on-one. And so they might write a letter to somebody who is the dream employer or dream professor at some graduate school and tell your true human story, and that's the best way to network. Others are great at coffee. They go out one-on-one with people or getting drunk with each other. You know, everybody's networking is not one-size-fits-all. It's what will work best for you, if anything.
And in today's world, a lot of people network via social media. And if that works for you, would you think that's a good way to go?
It is. It feels too, I think it leads to paper-thin relationships.
Right.
LinkedIn connections are just micrometer thin. What counts as human relations, why are you wanting networking? You're wanting to network for two reasons. One is so that, yes, they can help you with your career, and also so that you can be kind of helpful to them. It's best when there's reciprocity. And if it's just a stupid, you know, when I get these LinkedIn requests, hi, I'd like you to add you to my LinkedIn network.
Right.
You know, that is not going to do, I'm not going to do squat for that person when it comes time for a job. You want to create intimacy. There's an old Chinese saying that if you ask before a proper relationship has been developed, your request will not be granted. You can't count on LinkedIn relationships for a whole lot. You want to build an emotional connection. Then maybe if they're both emotionally connected with you and think that you are worth touting, then they may go and introduce you to their boss or whatever. Don't use LinkedIn, social media. What it really does is social media makes you feel insecure because people only post their awesome things. And so, you know, anybody looking at who lives a normal life is going to look at Facebook and they're going to think that everybody else is superior to them. So I'm not a big fan of, even though I'm on Twitter all the time, I blog, I have Facebook, I do all that crap, but I'm not looking for a job. If I were looking to enhance my career, I would be spending much more time with coffee than the cloud.
Amen to that. And as you said, dear listener, I mean, listen to what he's saying, because so many times in my past, it would be that even if somebody in my industry and you want to extend your, you know, your web of friends or contacts, it's one thing to know them. Well, I know them from the industry. It's quite another to go to a convention or something where they're all at. And as you said, have a cup of coffee with them, have lunch with them, because then it's on. I mean, you know, you make a special point to them, and they remember you, you remember them, and they don't forget.
And often it's not just the coffee. It is like with dating. If right away you have coffee with somebody and say, hey, babe, you want to have sex? It's, you know, yes, we live in a hookup culture, but generally it's fast. That's too fast.
Right.
What you really want to do in developing a kind of relationship that will both help you and where you're going to care to help them, it takes a few dates, so to speak. So if you meet them at a conference and you did have the coffee, yeah, on day one, say, hey, you know, they've got this evening outing where they're taking the bus ride to whatever. Hey, you want to go? Then you sit there with them. Then you have this nice conversation, and then you say, hey, would you mind if I, maybe we'll stay in touch afterwards? So then maybe he gives you an iffy answer. So then you don't make any big aggressive move, but maybe you'd come across some article that might be of interest to him. Let's say he's moving. He mentions he's moving to a new apartment. You might send him an article on how to make your move to a new apartment easy. You do it in little bits and pieces so the relationship builds slowly, and that's where really substantive friendships and mentorships and networking take place.
And it certainly does. And a lot of companies, I will say, well, we'll speak for the Bay, but even our own corporation, they've changed the way they've been doing business HR-wise, and I want you to know that one of these things is exactly what Marty's speaking to, and that is when something is now posted, HR will send out a memo and say, hey, have you run past anybody that you think in your life, even if they're private friends, who you might think would be good for this position? So it puts a whole new spin on things.
Well, that's certainly the way hiring goes on. You know, almost every reputable company now does most of its hiring through referral because there is so much dishonesty in people's resumes, cover letters, even phony references, that the companies don't want to do their hiring based on some ad or even a headhunter. They'd rather have somebody who's current employee of the company say, you know, this person is good. Because if, let's say you, Drex, say a friend of yours is really good, you're not going to do that unless the person is really good, because you're going to get in trouble if the person turns out to be bad.
Of course.
So that's why they're not trying to be nice in that case. They're trying to use a more valid way of doing initial screening than simply placing an advertisement.
And I like what you talked about. Write a thank you note, but just not a thank you note.
Right. I call it an influencing letter. You know, everybody now writes a thank you note. Nobody really believes it's legitimate. Oh, thank you very much for talking with me. It was a real pleasure. That is not going to distinguish you from the crowd. But an influencing letter would add a couple of things. Let's say there was something you said that was particularly impressive. To then say something like, I was gratified that you appreciated that I did blah. Or let's say you flubbed an answer. you gives you a chance in that thank you letter to say, you know, on further reflection, I've had an additional thought about your question about blah. It gives you a chance. And it also gives you a chance to include a piece of collateral material. Very often in the course of the interview, something comes clear about what they're really looking for. In the end, almost every employer who's hiring, there's one big factor that really ends up being the most important. And it may not be that clear from the job description, but in the interview it becomes clear. So let's say, in the end, what they're really worried about is, can they create more streamlined processes for handling paper or whatever? So it's fine for you to then send in, along with your influencing letter, a one-page that says, you know, I've done some thinking about this, how you might streamline the paper flow in this particular project. Here's a kind of a bulleted little flowchart about how I might handle it. Of course, I don't know enough about your company to say that for sure, but at least this gives me a window, it gives you a window into the way I think. Adding that piece of collateral material that can do a hell of a lot more to influence them to hire you than the stupid standard thank you letter.
Yep, that'll put it the antenna up. Ding, ding. Got it. All right, let's take a break, and we'll be back with Marty Nemko, martynemko.com. All things career are listed at his website. I'm telling you, it's extensive. We're going to talk about the best kind of teams for remote work. If you are a remote worker or you would like to be a virtual employee, we'll discuss it next on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
You're listening to the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
We're chatting with Marty Nemko, our career coach, as we do every Monday night, and we're going to talk about the best kind of teams for remote work. So that means everybody is a virtual worker. So they did this study, Marty, and the researchers identified and analyzed four specific types of team combinations: the busy teams, the carefree teams, mixed teams with a majority of carefree workers, and mixed teams with a majority of busy workers. The team combinations that had the best accountability and the best reduction of social loafing are the carefree teams and the mixed teams with the majority of the carefree workers.
Well, I think they measure the wrong things. Sometimes, you know, there's an old axiom that says, you want something done, ask a busy person. Because sometimes they find the way to get it done. What they're describing as the carefree teams are people who had no family responsibilities,
right,
or whatever.
No obligations.
Right, who are free to do everything. And it's obviously it's going to make a certain amount of sense. If you don't have three screaming babies waiting to come home, you're going to have a little more time. But I think that is less potent. I know people who have two kids, young kids, but when they're at work, they have this intrinsic drive to want to hold up their end. And there are other people who have nothing going on in their life, and they're just lazy, and they just are always loafing and needing somebody to pick them up. So, dear listeners, again, I love to use the term dear listeners. People don't believe me when I say this. You are very dear to me. It's a privilege for me to be talking to you because I know your life can be either improved or hurt depending on what the hell I say. So you are very dear to me. So, dear listeners, if you are forming some kind of a work group, don't worry so much about whether they have family or not. Worry about determine whether they are producers, whether they are somebody who has a track record of producing a lot, whether they have nine kids or none. There is this enormous difference among people in terms of how much drive they have. Are they motivated to just have as much fun as possible and do as little work as they can get away with? Or do they have this almost cosmic sense that it's important for them to be maximally productive? That's who you want on your team, whether or not they have seven kids or not.
And boy, oh boy, nowadays, I think a lot of times people are spending working even when they're at home because, you know, we can be virtual with just about everything.
Right.
If you're doing a white-collar job.
Right, and there are some people who enjoy, rather than watching some stupid sitcom, or even, heaven forbid, you know, giving up a board game with their kids, they would rather write that report, plan for that presentation, do whatever. Those people have this internal drive. That's what Google does when they hire. They are looking for people with internal drive, and they don't demand that people work 12 hours a day. Google has stopped that. They want a workforce that's predictable. They're going to give you good 8-10 hours a day, and then you can go home and have a life. But that's what you're looking for if you're hiring somebody, whether it's remotely or a local team, or even if it's not a matter of a team. You're looking for two things mainly. You're normally looking for intelligence, which means the ability to learn quickly, and you're looking for drive. You're looking for this intrinsic desire to be productive. That, it doesn't matter how many kids they have, in my judgment.
Very good. I don't know if you saw 60 Minutes last night, but they did this story on Denton, the guy who runs Gawker. And
right.
It gave me, you know, I showed you the story why millennials are the anxious generation. Well, they've got helicopter and overbearing parents, and certainly they're involved with social media, all parts and all aspects of their life. But it reminded me of something. You know, they were doing this story from his office, and forget the fact that Hulk Hogan won all this money, which was increased. We'll get to that after the top of the hour. But here was the thing. You've got all of these millennials in there. They're all in their cubicles, and they're responsible for coming up with 12 gawking stories per day. And there's a leaderboard on a huge monitor who's getting the most hits all the time. And you're right to generate 12 stories a day. And I thought to myself, and you know, this is not like old school reporting where you're out in the street and you're coming up with stories. You're basically clickbaiting through everybody else's feed and then rewriting it and reposting it. And
absolutely,
that's got to be incredibly stressful.
Yes. And that is an example of the fact that employers can always, they have a sword of Damocles over every worker's head. They can say, you know what, we can get an intern to do this. You know what, we can go and get this done in India. You know what, maybe we don't need to use people. Maybe we can use a machine and we can create, we can invest. You know, I'm hearing fast food restaurants, the head of Carl's Jr.
Yep.
said, you know what, we're sick and tired of raising the minimum wage. If you're going to raise the minimum wage, we've now got robotic hamburger flippers. So to me, the main reason millennials are nervous is the relative dearth of full-time benefited jobs and even part-time temp jobs. You are being monitored like a hawk for maximum productivity. That is the one thing I am more worried about than anything, perhaps more than terrorism or ISIS or whatever, is the lack of good jobs, and there could be ever more frustration, because unless you're Mr. or Ms., high-tech, brilliant, Harvard, Stanford graduate, and you're your average person who's got maybe a college degree from San Francisco State, maybe not that, average motivation, average intelligence, average drive, you're so vulnerable. And those are the majority of every generation, of course, including the millennials. And that is the core cause of their insecurity. One more thing I may say. Also, earlier generations had structure. People find some comfort in structure, family structure. Now, people don't necessarily get married. They cohabitate. They used to have church, which provided a routine. Most people don't go to church, especially here in the Bay Area. Their families are no longer two-parent families, so you may have two different step-parents. It is the lack of structure plus the lack of good jobs that is making the millennials the nervous generation.
And they are. All right, thank you very much, Marty Nemko. Have a great weekend. We'll discuss again next Monday.
Very good.
Thank you. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll be back. As I mentioned, the whole Hulk Hogan thing. Yes, he was awarded $40 million? $40 million more dollars today. How's that for a weekend? Friday, you get $115 million for the sex tape. And then hold on, Monday, we're going to add another $40. Oh, my God. For a sex tape? All right, we'll chat next. Yes, with our legal eagle and correspondent, Mari Fagel. That's on the way on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.